Good morning. My name is Michelle, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the McClatchy Third Quarter 2017 Earnings Call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question-and-answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, please press the pound key. I would now like to turn the call over to Ms. Stephanie Zerotti. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Michelle, and thank you all for joining us today for our third quarter 2017 earnings call. I'm Stephanie Zerotti, Investor Relations Manager, and I'll be available to answer any follow-up questions you may have after our call this morning. My phone number is 916-321-1931, and you can also find my contact information on our website. This call is being webcast at mcclatchy.com and will be archived for future reference. Our earnings release was issued this morning before the market opened, and I hope you've had a chance to review it. Joining me today is Craig Forman, our President and CEO, our Vice President of Operations, Mark Zeeman, and our Vice President and CFO, Elaine Lindekam. This conference call will contain forward-looking statements that are subject to risks and uncertainties that are described in our SEC filings. Actual results may differ materially from those described during this call. Also, non-GAAP amounts discussed this morning are reconciled to the most directly comparable GAAP measures in schedules posted on our website or in the body of our press release. Now, I'll turn the call over to Craig.
Thank you, Stephanie. Good morning, and thank you for joining us today. I'm going to jump right into our third quarter results, beginning with the non-cash headline this quarter. As you know from our press release, we reported after-tax non-cash charges of $230.9 million, which were primarily related to a deferred tax asset valuation allowance of $224.5 million. I want to emphasize that the valuation allowance does not reflect our point of view on our future profitability, nor does it impact our ability to use loss carryforwards or tax assets in the future. In fact, we have consistently generated taxable income and expect to do so this year. Also, as deferred tax assets are used or as conditions change, portions of the tax valuation allowance may be reversed, creating a non-cash tax benefit. The takeaway: this non-cash entry does not reflect the progress made in our business operations and in our transformation. Turning now to our business operations, we reported record audiences in the third quarter of 2017, reaching 89 million unique visitors in the month of September. Our progress in newsroom reinvention, technology improvements, and our reporting on Hurricane Irma boosted audience growth. While headwinds in revenue, particularly advertising, were slightly greater than expected, we were able nonetheless to dramatically reduce the rate of decline in our adjusted EBITDA, down 7.7%, excluding Hurricane Irma's full impact, compared with a 21% decline in the first half. We remain resolute in moving towards stabilized operating results, reducing leverage, and accelerating the pace and cadence of our digital transition. Improvements in the quarter include sequential improvement in our quarterly adjusted EBITDA decline rate. While we expect full-year adjusted EBITDA to be lower than last year, we will continue to work to close that gap and move towards stabilized EBITDA as we transition to a digital company. It is worth noting that in the quarter just ended, we received solely 24% of revenue from print newspaper advertising, reflecting the progress we have already achieved in transitioning to a digital business. Our digital subscribers grew to almost 93,000, despite our public service decision to loosen our paywalls during Hurricanes Irma and Nate to make news and information widely accessible to non-subscribers. The addition of digital talent to the company: Scott Manuel joined McClatchy as VP of Digital Product and Technology. Scott is a digital engineering executive with proven leadership experience in technology, product, finance, and strategy. We also added Anjali Joshi, an 11-year veteran at Google, to our board of directors. Anjali is an accomplished technology executive and electrical engineer who has held important leadership roles in several high-growth companies, and we look forward to her experience and insights as we continue our digital transition. We saw our CPM and impression growth, as well as growth in video views and revenue. Operating expenses were down 9.4%, and we expect those savings to continue into the fourth quarter from our cost-saving initiatives. And as we look at our capital structure improvements, we have $84 million of cash at the end of the quarter after repurchasing $53.5 million of debt and a leverage ratio that is well below 5 times, consistent with our commitment to continue to delever the company. We're continuing to accelerate the pace and cadence of our digital transition, and we'll work to build on that momentum. We will monetize our audience and advertising by marketing our subscription opportunities to consumers before they encounter a paywall, rolling out and providing better sales tools for our sales force. In the third quarter, we completed our transition from an internally built CRM product to the Salesforce CRM platform. Training and implementation of this best-in-breed tool will aid in identifying, tracking, and processing our advertiser needs. While this has been part of our sales investments throughout 2017, we completed the Salesforce platform deployment to the last of our markets in September. Pressing ahead with our newsroom reinvention, which is showing strong results with higher traffic and higher rates of growth than we're seeing in the newsrooms that have not yet been exposed to the new tools, platforms, and processes of this important digitalization effort. In markets where we have completed the transition, we are seeing better than anticipated productivity and improvement. For instance, page views per editorial dollar spent grew 80% faster than in the newsrooms that have not yet launched reinvention. More readers and article views mean more opportunities to monetize a visit through our audience marketing efforts, as well as advertising opportunities. We are also pursuing innovative approaches to news, and particularly the future of news delivery. At Video Lab West, McClatchy's incubator for emerging forms of nonfiction storytelling, we are recruiting a team of creative technologists and beginning our efforts around augmented and virtual reality. We're holding conversations now with our technology partners to formulate our initial collaborative projects. We're excited about the prospect of what this operation can mean for our audience, advertisers, and the media industry in general. And speaking of innovation, our Fort Worth Star-Telegram and McClatchy Video Lab teams took home an award last week at the Online News Association, the award for excellence and innovation in visual digital storytelling. Their weekly series, Titletown TX, Titletown, Texas, documented a local high school football team and, I'm quoting, blazed a new path for documentary video storytelling. The series is available on our digital platforms as well as on Facebook Watch, where millions of people have seen it. Now, I recognize that our organizational changes have been many, and just as technology is constantly evolving, we must be flexible and lean into change in order to remain competitive and provide the journalism at the speed and medium that our readers demand. Speaking of our audience and customers, I've mentioned Hurricane Irma a few times this morning, and I want to say that our mission of local journalism with national reach has perhaps never been better exemplified than by the Miami Herald's coverage of Hurricane Irma. With our journalists, as well as those from such other media companies as CNN and the New York Times, safely ensconced in the former U.S. Army Southern Command Center that is the Herald's newsroom, they kept local Floridians and all of us informed of Hurricane Irma's every move, as well as where, how, and when they could reach help for virtually any need throughout the crisis. Many from across the nation were kept abreast of the hurricane's path and the damage it caused as it changed its trajectory over the week. I'm proud of how our newsrooms, audience, advertising, and production teams worked together to reach the communities from Florida to Georgia and the Carolinas. And our coverage continues as readers seek information on more storms in the Gulf, terrible fires out here in the West, and the horrible tragedy of the recent shootings in Las Vegas. Before we segue into the quarterly results with Elaine, I've touched upon just part of the great deal of change underway at McClatchy. I will have even more detail to share when we report on our 2018 outlook and the impact of these items in the coming quarter. Elaine?
Thanks, Craig. In the third quarter, we reported an adjusted net loss of $5.9 million. Our adjusted EBITDA trend improved 9.3% sequentially from Q2, and our adjusted EBITDA margin was essentially flat to that reported last year. Total revenues were down 9.4% compared to the same period a year ago. Revenues exclusive of print advertising accounted for about 76% of total revenues in the quarter, an increase from the third quarter of 2016 as we continue to work towards less reliance on print advertising. Advertising revenues in the third quarter were down 13.4% in total, a decline trend of about 2% from the previous quarter. The decline in advertising was due in large part to a 23% decline in print advertising, our largest decline this year, and was mainly attributable to the continued headwinds we face in preprint and retail environment. The world of retail is changing, and we continue to adapt and find what works best for our advertisers in this environment. No surprise, a large part of the answer is our digital strategy. Our digital-only advertising revenues were shy of our expected double-digit growth rate at 8.2% this quarter. There were micro and macro factors that impacted that growth rate, but we believe those issues to be temporary and not reflective of our outlook for the fourth quarter, as you'll hear from Mark shortly. Direct marketing declined 6.4% compared to a decline of 14.5% in the third quarter last year. The improved trend in direct marketing continues to be due to new customers added in the second half of last year that are beginning to roll over this and next quarter. In audience, our total revenues declined 4.3% in the quarter. As Craig noted, we loosened the paywalls in many of our East Coast markets in September to make our information widely accessible to non-subscribers as a public service during Hurricane Irma, and we believe that affected our revenue growth rate. Now let me turn the call over to Mark to provide an update on advertising and audience revenue strategies.
Thank you, Elaine. In the third quarter, our digital advertising represented 36.5% of our total advertising revenue, up 4 points from the same quarter last year. And if you add in direct marketing, more than half of our advertising revenue is no longer connected to our daily print product. To echo Craig and Elaine, our digital results were slowed by the retail headwinds that seemed to pick up pace in the third quarter. That's a sector that continues to struggle this year, with print declines in the 20-25% range year-to-date, as well as in Q3. Our digital-only retail revenue is now actually larger than our print ROP retail revenue, and it continues to grow. But in the third quarter, our retail digital-only growth was in the high single digits, not the double-digit growth we saw in the first half. The auto industry also has struggled this year, and we've seen mid-single-digit declines year-to-date in our auto digital-only revenue, including the third quarter. But there was good news as well. While we didn't quite reach double-digit growth, our total digital-only revenue grew by more than 8% over last year. Once again, national digital-only revenue was a bright spot for us, up more than 21% from last year, driven by programmatic, which was up nearly 34% in the third quarter. Our real estate and employment categories have seen digital-only revenue growth every quarter this year, including in Q3. In fact, our employment digital-only revenue grew 13% last quarter, the best performance of the year, even though we terminated our agreement with CareerBuilder at the end of July. Much of our CareerBuilder business was bundled print and digital revenue, which has been in sharp decline for the last several quarters. We saw that again in Q3, but on the pure digital side, we've already been able to successfully transition our customers to other employment solutions and continue to grow that category. We remain focused on growing our digital revenue as much and as quickly as possible, and we intend to get back to double-digit growth in our final quarter of 2017. A big driver of that is our Accelerate Digital Agency, which now has 75 full-time employees managing more than 110 different brands across McClatchy and also outside of our 30 core markets. More than half of those advertisers are new to us, and more than half of the revenue is as well. Our clients are seeing a strong return on investment, and as a result, we're seeing high retention rates and long-term commitments. Our Accelerate revenue continues to build nicely each month, with about $20 million of revenue currently in the sales pipeline. So we expect this to contribute nicely to our total digital revenue moving forward. In fact, more than half of our locally sold digital-only revenue is no longer related to the content on our websites, but comes from classified products, audience extension efforts, and digital services such as reputation management, search engine optimization, and other products and services that Accelerate is designed to provide. As Craig mentioned, Accelerate isn't the only investment we're making to grow revenue more and faster. Last quarter, we also completed a rollout of the Salesforce CRM tool to all of our advertising departments, which included extensive training for our sales teams. Taking our sales consultants off the front lines for several days might not have helped our short-term revenue performance last quarter, but we're confident we'll see real benefits from Salesforce down the road. We're also continuing to build out and monetize our video efforts. In the third quarter, our video revenue across McClatchy grew 56%, and our video views across all of our platforms reached 105 million, up about 78% from last year. In September alone, due to our coverage of Hurricane Irma, we saw total video views reach almost 50 million across all platforms. In fact, through Q3, we have had more than 235 million video views, already exceeding the total video views from all of 2016. Speaking of traffic, let me move to our audience results. We saw a 4.3% decline in total audience revenue in the third quarter, mostly from continued decline in print volumes and cycling over price increases we put in place over the last several quarters. We also saw a dip in digital audience revenue for a couple of reasons. We've had a historically busy hurricane season this year, as you all know, and as a public service, we dropped our paywalls for several days across many of our markets along the Gulf and East Coast. That led to fewer digital subscription starts in Q3, still up nearly 16% from last year to almost 93,000. That's lower than we anticipated, but still keeps us on track to exceed 100,000 digital subscriptions this year. We also made a strategic decision to change our news and education program, which delivers sponsored digital copies of our newspapers to schools. To maximize the effectiveness of that program for our school partners, we shifted our NIE copies out of the summer programs and put them all into the school year. This was a one-time shift that pushed digital revenue out of P7 and P8 into the subsequent periods, and that's why we saw a slight dip in digital-only audience revenue for the entire quarter. Without the hurricanes and NIE shift, we would have shown growth in digital-only audience revenue last quarter, and in fact, we're back to growth now. Total page views grew 8.7% to 986 million in the third quarter, compared to the same period last year. Total average unique visitors grew 23% to 78 million compared to the same quarter last year, and our local unique visitors grew almost 20% over the same period. Certainly, our coverage of the quarter's major news events, including Irma, helped drive that traffic, but so did our newsroom reinvention efforts and our expansion across platforms such as AMP and Google Newsstand. As a result, in the third quarter, we saw both growth in ad volumes as well as rates. Our audience growth continues to set records for our company, and our new digital subscriber platform will help us more effectively convert those visitors to paid subscribers moving forward. So, barring more hurricanes, we expect continued growth in digital-only audience and revenue. Now I'll turn it back to Elaine to complete the review of our third quarter results.
Well, no review of third quarter would be complete without a look at cost reductions. And given our track record and commitment to legacy cost reductions, it should be no surprise that we again posted significant improvement in operating costs this quarter. We saw our unadjusted and adjusted operating costs decline 9.4%. Much of the savings are a result of rolling over the impact of adjustments to our new structure, our plans that we had outlined in prior quarters. The current quarter is seeing the benefit of the shift to regional publishers, centralization of audience functions, reinvention of our newsrooms, and the prior reorganization, regionalization of our finance department. These changes are reflected mainly in compensation and newsprint costs. Looking at our capital structure, in the third quarter, interest costs related to bonds were down $1.2 million and down nearly $3 million year-to-date. We expect greater savings in the fourth quarter given our debt repayment. With the momentum of our asset sales, we're focused, as ever, on capital structure. In the third quarter, we retired all of our notes due in 2017, and that was about $16.9 million. We offered $65 million of our proceeds from the Career Builder sale to the secured bondholders at par, and $1.7 million of the 22 notes were tendered in connection with that offer. We sold our Sacramento, California real property and Kansas City, Missouri office building for combined proceeds of $56.8 million. The Sacramento real property is a sale leaseback and is classified as a financing obligation on our balance sheet. We repurchased $35 million in principal amount of our 9% notes shortly after the completion of the Sacramento sale leaseback transaction. While our next debt maturity is not until 2022, when our first lien bonds come due, We have the ability to call those notes in on December 15th this year at a premium of 104.5% under the bond indenture. So it makes sense that we'd consider our financing options. That said, 2022 is a long ways away, so while we'll consider our refinancing options, no decision has been made on that front. Also, as to expectations of previously disclosed items being marketed, we remain in contract for the building and land in Raleigh, North Carolina, and we expect the transaction to close in the fourth quarter. We've also entered into an LOI on Columbia, South Carolina, real property. We ended the quarter with cash of $84 million and debt of $805 million. Our leverage ratio was 4.48 times cash flow as defined in our credit agreement. We have an unused $65 million revolving credit facility, and the restricted payments basket under our 2022 bond indenture was approximately $760 million at the end of the quarter. We remain confident in our ability to manage debt and expect to reduce our debt and our leverage ratio even further in the coming quarters while continuing to invest in the business. Finally, our capital expenditures were $2.7 million in the third quarter and totaled $7.4 million for the first 9 months. And now I'll let Craig wrap up our outlook.
Thanks, Elaine. For the last quarter of 2017, we expect to grow digital-only advertising revenue, finishing the full year in the low double-digit range. We expect that print advertising will continue to become a smaller portion of advertising and of our total revenue. Audience revenues are expected to be down in the low single-digit percent range in the fourth quarter and the full year compared to 2016, in part as a result of loosening paywalls during various weather-related events this year. The impact from Hurricane Irma will carry over a little bit into the fourth quarter. We expect about a $500,000 hit to revenues, mostly in direct marketing, as our customers in the Caribbean will be unable to complete orders previously placed with the Miami Herald's magazine and book division. Our small newspapers in the Florida Keys are also still dealing with the storm's extensive aftermath. We remain committed to reducing operating expenses in the fourth quarter and expect adjusted operating expenses to be down in the mid to high single-digit percentage range as earlier efforts take hold in the fourth quarter, excluding cleanup costs related to Hurricane Irma in the Florida Keys. Strategies initiated in 2017 to continue our digital transformation and reduce legacy costs include, among others, moving to regional group publishers, centralizing audience functions, consolidating production, and other functions and reinventing our newsrooms to have a digital-first workflow. For the full year, these actions will result in initial implementation costs in the range of $18 million to $20 million, which may include accelerated depreciation and certain other non-cash costs. This compares to similar upfront costs of approximately $40 million in 2016 to further our digital transformation and continue the reduction of legacy costs. Now, I'd like to open up the call so that we can answer your questions.
At this time, if anybody would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Again, that would be star 1 on your telephone keypad. Your first question comes from Avi Steiner from JP Morgan. Your line is open.
Thanks for taking the questions. First off, I heard some very good detail around anticipated revenue hit, direct marketing, et cetera, from the hurricanes, but is there a way to quantify the impact of loosening paywalls, and if you gave it and I missed it, I apologize, but loosening of paywalls on the audience line, and how long is that going to continue, and is that behind all of the decline, or is there some print attrition in there? Thanks.
Let me take it first, Abby. It's Craig, and then I'll hand it over to Mark for a bit of additional detail. I'm happy to report that, yes, there's quite good insight, and the insight's getting better and better. As you'll remember, we stood up our new audience measurement platform, MPP, earlier this year. And so we are much more able to pinpoint the trade-offs between loosened paywalls and direct audience impact than we would have been able to before MPP, and we can quantify the trade-off that you might get from more overall advertising inventory, more overall audience, and the rate thereof. So we can see that with better clarity. What's more tricky is to forecast the impact that has on the pickup in lifetime value, an increase in subs over the period. So I think most people in the industry, as we move towards a much more digital-first approach to this, are beginning to put in place the tools that we're laser-focused on, which over time give more insight to the ability to attach to new customers who may not be current subscribers and present them with offers and other opportunities to become subscribers. Of course, when your paywall is loosened, you don't have those opportunities as easily because those subscribers aren't presented with that opportunity in quite the same way. That's the high-level response to the question.
Yeah.
Hello?
Mark? Yeah. Mark, were you going to give some detail?
No, I think Craig said it fine. I mean, we certainly have a better opportunity now to gauge the impact of loosening our paywalls and what that means on future digital subscriptions during that time. But it is sort of a, you know, it is something that we will routinely continue to do because of a public service aspect of keeping our readers informed during natural disasters. Hopefully hurricane season is coming to an end, but if, you know, we have other storms or blizzards during the winter season, we'll do the same thing.
Yeah, and I think to be more specific to the question, Avi, I would say that there we are, as Mark mentioned in his call, rolling over some price increases that were implemented in the prior quarter. So there is some impact of lower volumes and rolling over those price increases in the 4.3% decline that we saw in the third quarter.
Yeah, the majority of would be that, and then the smaller part would be the loosening of the paywalls.
Perfect, thank you. And if I could switch gears here, and I don't know, it may not be overly material, but I guess CareerBuilder, the affiliation agreement ended July 31. Recruitology came in, I believe, first or second week of September. Bridge the gap or maybe confirm that revenue line item should have been higher had it been a full quarter, maybe how we should think about that for the balance.
Sure. Yeah. You know, we know that there were concerns in this category because of the termination of our CareerBuilder agreement at the end of July, as you said. And as I said in my remarks, much of our CareerBuilder business was bundled print and digital revenue, print and bundled print and digital. And that has already been in sharp decline for the last several quarters. That was a category of business that has been in decline. And we saw that decline even further in Q3. With the end of our CareerBuilder agreement. But what did change was that our employment digital-only revenue grew 13% last quarter, which was the best performance of the year as we transitioned to other employment solutions, including Recruitology, and continue to find ways to grow that category. So while this category is down overall because of the print and bundled digital declines, and probably will remain that way for a bit, we think there's upside going forward as the digital-only part of the business grows.
Okay, and then I think you had mentioned there was $20 million in the pipeline from Accelerate. Is that a gross number to McClatchy, and how does that, is that a coming 12 months, or how do we think about that number?
The Accelerate contracts, one of the things that are great about them is that they're large and they're long-term. So this would be over the next several months. I don't think we'll give a specific time period for you, but that's sales that we've identified working with our 110 clients and others that I mentioned on my remarks earlier.
All right, and maybe I'll end it on this, and thank you for the time. Real estate sales, I don't think the Casey amount on the production facility side had previously been disclosed. But if you can refresh us on maybe money still to come in, I know there's $22 million. I think that's just Raleigh, but there's Columbia that's under LOI. Just maybe how we think about that. And generally speaking, should we expect the company to continue to chip away at its 9% debt stack, all else being equal? Thank you.
Thanks, Avi. It's Elaine, of course. The $22 million is actually a combination of Raleigh and a small building in Merced. We also, as we mentioned, are under LOI for Columbia. We had previously indicated that we expected gross proceeds this year to be in the $100 million range. We think that will still be the case, particularly if Columbia closes in the fourth quarter, although given the timing, it may not close until the first quarter. So I think we're generally on track to being close to that $100 million. A lot of it just depends on timing of final closes. And as it relates to the 9%, we obviously, you know, are economic animals as it relates to this sort of stuff. And so we would look at that, and if it was advantageous to us to chip away at that, we will. And if it's not advantageous, we may not. We may look beyond those. I would say that there is a current offering out for approximately $40 million, and that relates to the after-tax gain on the Sacramento property and the Kansas City office property that we took in. The after-tax proceeds of those two together were about $44.8 million. We'll reinvest some of that in the business. The other $40 million is out for an offer. I don't know whether there will be any of the the 22s coming in. I suspect a small piece. There certainly was in the last par offering that we made. And beyond that, we will look at the pricing on those bonds and give thought to it. We'll also look at pricing on the unsecured bonds and give thought to that. So that's kind of where we're at and what we're looking for.
And if I could just clarify one quick thing, and thank you again for the time. The $100 million that target that you're sticking to, with maybe some leakage into Q1 of next year, but that is excluding the KC production facility?
It is.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Abby.
Your next question comes from Michael Kavinsky from Nobel Capital Market. Your line is open.
Thank you. First of all, you guys did an amazing job on cost cutting in the quarter. And I was just wondering, when will the company cycle through the step up in cost initiatives? Was that in the second quarter? Or was that in the first quarter of this year?
Let me take it first, Mike, but then let's see if we can provide a little additional color. I think what we want to describe as our overall approach to cost attention is we're laser focused on stabilization in operating cash flow as the takeaway that we'd like you to have. And we think that there are continuing ways we can look at costs and continue to drive productivity enhancements. Newsroom reinvention would be an example of one. And so I don't think we look at, you know, cost control as being something that is ever finished. You know, you're constantly trying to remove costs from areas that are not growing and apply productivity increases to enhance the pace and cadence of the growth in areas that are. So I think conceptually, I'd like to start out at that point. But then in terms of just core step changes, Elaine, maybe
sure.
You want to...
you know, we've been at this business for a long time, Mike, and so in the first quarter and second quarter of this year, we were rolling over cost initiatives that we had put in place in 2016, and so that was helpful. And then we put into place additional cost efforts in the first half of 2017, and those are benefiting us in the second half of this year, and some of those will continue to benefit us in the first half of next year. I'd remind you that we aren't just cost-cutting without a strategy. Our focus is on becoming a more digital company, and as our revenues become more digital, that means that there are legacy costs that we are cutting back, and that also means that technology has allowed us to be more efficient. So a lot of what we're trying to do is streamline our operations, or, like in the case of newsroom reinvention, really focus on digital workflows and digital tools that we now have and can use that will help us reduce costs. So strategically, as we look at the technology that allows us to grow our revenues, a lot of that technology also allows us to cut legacy costs and be more effective and more efficient. And so we'll continue to look at those. So we will benefit in the fourth quarter from initiatives that we put in the first half of this year. I dare say that that will continue over to some extent in the first half of 2018, but you shouldn't expect that we will suddenly be done. We will continue to work. Our newsroom reinvention will have be completed, I think, at almost 19 of our papers this year, but that means there's still a lot of papers, you know, smaller ones, but nonetheless papers that we will focus on next year. And we will continue to look at production resources around the company and see if there are better ways to produce the paper at some of the markets that haven't yet been outsourced. Although, granted, we've done a great job. Nearly two-thirds of our newspapers have been outsourced. So lots of work will continue, as Craig said. Cost efficiencies and effective and streamlined operations is the way of the future for us and not something that ends in any given quarter.
Gotcha. In terms of retail, you know, obviously we're dealing with, at some point, the law of diminishing numbers, I would think. But in the case of the decline in the third quarter was probably the steepest that I've ever seen going back even to 2013, if my numbers are right. And so I was just wondering if you can give your thoughts about what was the, you know, if there's anything that particularly accounted for the accelerated pace of the decline from the sequential, you know, just sequentially from the second quarter, but just certainly from the pace of that, what we have seen over the course of the last several years. And then your thoughts about how, when we might start seeing some moderation in that category.
Mike, it's Craig. I'll start and throw it over to Mark. So I think there is potentially some anecdotal evidence that the things in retail across the country that we saw pick up pace in the very first quarter of this year with bankruptcies and store closings. You know, are beginning to have even more of a bite as the year progresses. And while we're not the right forum to do an analysis of the changing nature of retail in the United States, there are others who should do that. Clearly, in all kinds of communities around the country, the changing face of retail, bricks and mortar, it is having an impact on our business, but it's having an even more larger impact on employment and in many of the communities we serve. And so I think what you're seeing is, as that begins to flow through into an entire industry sector, I think what you'll begin to see, and we already are among those involved in this, is a transition, because after all, people are still buying things at retail, just more of that spend is happening digitally. So we actually have an opportunity as McClatchy to facilitate that transition because of our investment in digital platforms and understanding our customers. But those kinds of changes are discontinuous and bumpy and also regional. What happens in the Southeast is not necessarily mirrored as obvious in the Northeast or in the West. And so while we have a footprint across the country, there is some regional impact and there is some regional sensitivity. And we see that in some particular cases with some highly localized impacts, different people and different trading. Mark may be able to amplify that.
Well, I mean, clearly retail continues to struggle, and the brick and mortar is struggling, and online sales are growing, and our major retail advertisers are trying to find their way through the digital transformation and cutting costs and all fronts and, you know, attempt to get through it. So their pain, to some extent, obviously, is our pain, but that doesn't mean retail is going away. It still represents a large part of our business, and we'll continue to work with our advertisers in retail, but in different ways, you know, including using data to better target our clients' message to the, you know, audience that we're bringing through our digital products. You know, I mentioned this, I think, on the last call, but it's worth repeating that even though we're experiencing percentage declines in print advertising revenue, similar to the trend that we saw at the beginning of the recession, our print revenue is a much smaller part of our business. And as print revenue has dropped, we've also posted years of growth in our digital revenue. So while the print drop is certainly not pleasant, its effect on total ad revenue is less than half of what it once was and gets smaller each year. And the math only gets better as our digital revenues continue to increase. So that's why we're focused so much on digital-only revenue.
Gotcha. And in terms of just looking at your digital revenues. Some publishers have indicated that they need to have at least 100 million unique visitors to cross the threshold, cross that threshold to maximize the level of national advertising and programmatic advertising. And first, I was just wondering, do you agree with that? And if so, do you think that your current platform will be able to achieve the 100 million uniques, or do you think that you need a broader platform to do that?
Well, you know, we touched 89 in the most recent month, million uniques in the month. And, you know, I don't think there is any bright line around any number that ends in nice round zeros. A lot of this actually under the hood investment is in better understanding what each one of those customers represents and being able to target each one of those customers with the offer and with the opportunities that deliver value for our advertising customers. So I don't think there's any magic around that. If, Mike, you're asking whether or not our platform can sustain 100 million, we're building for 100 million and beyond. And so I don't think you should have any profound concern that somehow or another there's a ceiling or some sort of natural limit to McClatchy's ability from a technology point of view of being able to deliver to 100 million uniques or beyond. And Scott joining our team, along with Terry Geiger, our VP for technology, I'm very convinced that we continue to invest in the kinds of platforms refactoring that'll take us well beyond the next you know, sort of natural big number that ends in a couple of zeros, 100 million. But I think your overall question gets to something, you know, really, really important. As these businesses become more digital, what becomes crucial is that you have insight as to each one of the unique visitors and each one of your subscribing audience members, and monetization can become more valuable the more data you have around those users. Traditionally, that's been the kind of talk track you might have heard from one of the big platform companies in Silicon Valley, which, you know, as you know, has taken an awful lot of the incremental dollars that have been devoted to advertising in general, and digital in particular. We work pretty closely with those platform companies, but I think, you know, speaking personally, coming from those places and then thinking about how our company continues to change and evolve, we're leaning into that opportunity. These kinds of businesses, the McClatchys of this world, are absolutely able to target on that basis if we use our data intelligently and continue to refactor our platform. So I think there's reason to be hopeful there.
And I would add that, you know, we can also extend our reach through audience extension, which we've successfully done, and that about half of our digital revenue is no longer tied to the journalism content on our websites, but comes from audience extension, classified verticals, and digital services like reputation management.
Gotcha. And thanks for taking all my questions. I do have one last question. Obviously, you know, over the course of the last decade, a lot of the broadcasters have been spinning off newspapers, and most recently we had an instance of a broadcaster merging with a newspaper company. What are your thoughts in terms of the prospect of seeing, you know, maybe broadcasters kind of moving back into the newspaper industry, and whether or not there's some utility and functionality in merging a broadcaster with a newspaper company against what, you know, the grain of what has happened over the course of the last 10 years?
You know, Mike, that's a fascinating question, and I'm not sure our third quarterly earnings call is the right place for us to talk about, potential for combinations, except to say, I think we believe that the underlying trends reflect our strategy, or maybe I should say our strategy reflects an opportunity to monetize the underlying trends. We're laser focused on products that are essential in our communities, to our neighbors, in our areas, and providing data that makes us essential to our advertising customers and to our other monetization customers, right? So the point there is that as these kinds of platform businesses, and we'll just speak about our own, are able to pace that digital transition, to grow the ways that we've been growing, even as some of our other operations have, sort of had their inevitable transition from a strong print-only world, I think we're well-placed to be an important factor in the markets in which we operate. And those 30 markets are some of the best markets in the United States. So we like our platform and we like our markets.
And then this is Elaine, Mike. I just want to go back to the whole revenue discussion for a minute and just say that as advertisers increasingly turn to the web, they're also increasingly demanding transparency on where their media dollars are going. And so their message is running, and they want to make sure that humans are seeing it and not bots. And so they're really looking for a space where people like us as premium publishers have a brand that they can connect to in terms of in trying to connect to fake news or other kind of extremist content. And so we think that supporting a brand safe, legitimate news environment is one of the reasons that we were both a founding member of the LMC, which gives us a much larger reach, and of Nucleus, which is focused on national advertising. I'd point out that our national online only has grown 21% in the quarter and 17.5% in the full year, and that our programmatic advertising was up 34% in the quarter. So I don't think 100 million views will limit us as long as we continue to work with partners and as long as we continue to offer the kinds of premium customers that these demanding advertisers are asking for.
Thanks for that color, Elaine. Thank you.
The next question comes from David Hebert from Wells Fargo. Your line is open.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for taking the questions. I wanted to ask a question first on direct marketing. I was down a little bit more than 6%. I know you mentioned there might be some hurricane impact continuing into the fourth quarter, but just kind of curious your near-term and maybe 2018 outlook on that business.
Sure. Just as a reminder, our direct marketing is made up of inserts that go to non-subscribers, direct mail, and other niche products, including magazines and books. Reprints inserts are typically very closely tied to our retail print business, and as that declines, so does that component of direct marketing. And certainly the advertising headwinds that we saw in retail advertising correlate to the direct marketing line items. However, you know, those losses have been somewhat offset by some TMC products that have been performing pretty well in some of our larger markets because of some new advertisers that have moved in there. And so whereas last year we were seeing sort of double-digit declines in that category, now we're seeing single digits. And we're starting to roll over some of that growth, but our trends are still much better than the prior year. You know, we do expect this category to be impacted in the fourth quarter in the southeastern markets, primarily Miami, which has a very large custom book and magazine division that works with many resorts and cruise lines, including many throughout the Caribbean, who were impacted significantly by Hurricane Irma. And so even though those books are on the way, they've had to close the resorts or delay the publication because of issues on their end. And so those usually hit at the end of the year, and looks like those will be delayed. And that's why we're talking about the impact in the fourth quarter. How much that carries over into next year, I guess sort of depends on the cleanup efforts in the Caribbean. But it's really a localized problem with Miami at this point.
Okay, thanks for that. And then on the balance sheet, your leverage ratio, Elaine, if you could just explain what that definition is. I believe it's net of cash, correct?
Net of cash that exceeds $20 million. So $64 million roughly of our cash would have gone towards producing a net debt number that the leverage ratio was calculated on.
Okay. And so if I take that $84 million, and there's a lot of moving parts with asset sales, so are there any immediate pro forma adjustments we should make for any Q4 activity on cash?
I'm not sure what you mean by immediate pro forma adjustments. We're not selling businesses. We're selling property. And so it isn't impacting our business operations. So I can't think of any pro forma things that you should factor in there, but I'm really, perhaps after this call, you could reach out to Stephanie or me and we can better understand what you mean.
Sure, I just meant any further debt reduction between quarter end and today. That's all I meant.
I see. All right. Well, I wouldn't forecast that, but we clearly have additional asset sales that we expect to close, and whether or not we use that cash to immediately reduce debt is not a decision that's made at this time.
Okay, and just last question. You mentioned potential refinancing options for the secured notes. Can you talk about some of those considerations, and would you look at the loan market or a combination of loans or bonds? Is that on the table?
I would not. I wouldn't comment on that. I just think that it's an obvious question because I've been getting calls asking about it, and I guess I would remind you that we have until 2022 to do anything with those. It's a natural thing to think about a refinancing when you have a call date coming up and you have a lot of cash on your balance sheet. But we also know that the call premium gets lower the longer we wait. And we also have unsecured bonds that allow us to delever more quickly than necessarily paying down 22s that are trading at a premium. So when I say we're considering it, that really is what we're doing. We're just considering it. We haven't made any decisions at all because it would be imprudent to rush a decision like that. So we're giving some thought to it, but we haven't thought in specific terms about any particular type of refinancing. We just recognize that it's a good market out there now, and it's something to think about. But the call is still at a pretty hefty premium at 104.5, and that's also something to think about.
Right. Okay. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
The next question comes from Doug Arthur from Huber Research. Your line is open.
Yeah, thanks. Just a quick one. You dealt with some specificity on the digital employment category. On the digital auto, looks like it deteriorated a little bit from the second quarter. What's it going to take to get that line going north again? Thanks.
Auto
sales. Well, the auto category in general weakened in the last half of last year, and we've seen that trend continue through 2017. It's I think September it brightened a bit, but up until then, auto sales have been down this year. Our cars.com revenue was down slightly in the third quarter, but actually has improved a point or so each quarter of this year and continues to improve. And our total auto revenue is now about 70% digital only, and we continue to add more products in that category to build out our options beyond cars.com and also to replace the ongoing decline in print revenue. So this is something that we've been working on, adding more products and services for our dealers, and including through our Accelerate agency services and standing up a vertical there. So we continue to have high hopes for this category, but it has been struggling this year.
Great. Thank you very much.
The next question comes from Todd Morgan from Jefferies. Your line is open.
Thanks, and thanks for the question. Just one here. Elaine, you guys continue to do a great job on cost management, and you'd listed several areas where you're seeing the improvement in regionalization and so on. You'd also said those are mostly showing up in the newsprint and compensation areas. If I look at the cost structure, actually the largest cost area is the other category, and that's down equally dramatically. I don't know if you can help understand what some of those areas are. And I guess in particular, it's been, like you said, the second quarter of pretty dramatic cost moves on that side. Thanks.
Sure. A lot of that has come from centralizing our audience function and cutting costs in that area. So certainly there was headcount associated with that, but there were also a lot of expenses in delivery costs and things of that nature. And I would say that that's the biggest area. The other thing that's in there is that we had a pretty nice gain on the Kansas City office building when we sold it, and that gain is buried in other expenses. And so that will pop out a lot, and just various expenses, mail costs as direct marketing revenues go down, so does postage and things like that. But so I think the biggest thing in the third quarter was, and actually in the second quarter, is that we've sold some assets and the gains related to those assets are netted into those other costs.
No, that makes sense. So in general, outside of that, it's printing and distribution. Is that the kind of areas, the non-people-related printing distribution costs are really the areas? Okay.
Yeah, no, distribution costs are big. Mm-hmm.
Right. All right, that's helpful. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Your next question comes from Craig Inman from Artisan Partners. Your line is open.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my question. I'm curious about the Cars.com affiliate agreement. Our question relates to when it expires in 2019. Do you guys have a chance to renew that agreement? And also, it looks pretty profitable. So I was curious what expenses are against it to get a sense of how much it's contributing to profit for the company. Thanks.
Yeah, it does expire in October of 2019, so we have it through most of that year. We're obviously working hard towards, selling that auto advertising, and there certainly will be discussions at that time as to whether or not we and our career builder choose to extend that agreement, and so no decisions have been made on that now. And in terms of the operating margin on it, that's not something that we typically disclose, but I will tell you that it is profitable.
Okay, so you can't talk about just the cost you would apply against that. You know, you sell it at, you pay a 60% wholesale rate and sell it at the retail rate, how that would.
That is correct. That is correct. And we have obviously our own salespeople, but they sell many products, and so we haven't tended to break that out towards how much of their time is spent on CareerBuilder versus something
cars,
else.
Cars.
I'm sorry, on cars.com versus something else.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
This time, it brings us to the end of our Q&A session. I'd like to turn the call back over to the presenters for closing remarks.
All right, well, we'd like to thank you all for joining our third quarter call. Again, if there's any questions, feel free to reach out. Have a great day.
Thank you, everyone. This will conclude today's conference call. You may now disconnect.